When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Men's Journal Everyday Warrior Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Cirelli. We got John Wellborn of the Everyday Warrior Nation. We've got Sanjay Ribeiro, multi-world champion, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, just total stud, who went to Rhythmia. John, of course, had to bow out the morning of, and we understand we'll get into that. And then Shep Rose of Bravo TV, who also joined us in Rhythmia. First off, I want to say, John, I appreciate the workout this morning at 3:30. We lift about 50,000 pounds. Yeah. We just did bench until we hit 50,000 pounds. Oh, yeah, it was good. You guys balked at 3:30, like a bunch of little you-know-whats. We've got to start in the day.
Okay.
I mean, you look like you're just waking up, and you look like
I had some morning sex.
Okay, there you go.
He's like, next time I want to be with another person.
Exactly.
He was pounding something else.
Well, we're calling this the Rhythmia After Action Review. It'll be a little vulnerable. It'll be a little serious. It will. It'll also be pretty comedic as we dive into it. I think I want to start with even John and the rest of us. What was your reason for attending?
Well, as everyone know, I was born in the Amazon, so I have always, you know, in tune with plant medicine. And then John came in with the idea, like, hey, we're doing this project. I think it just suits you because of your spiritual approach in life and things like this. Definitely the timing was the best because I had, like, all these trips, you know, scheduled. But I think for me it was a good timing, a good calling. Because interesting enough, I was pretty much advocating for ayahuasca for like the past 6 months, and people going to these retreats and ask me questions about ayahuasca. I'm like, you know, I just tell you what I know about it. And yeah, for me, it was a great timing. It was near my birthday. You know, John's been seeing my struggles with like leadership and going with my team and things like this. So for me, it was a very big opportunity to like, you know, have a little, you know, ethereal information about purpose, you know what I mean? And then definitely when he told me what was that about, I even told Jerry that I was very skeptical about the way it's done, but it was magical, and definitely I really appreciate the opportunity to be there and, you know, hang out with these guys,
especially these men here.
Well, I kind of was at a sort of crossroads, I suppose you could say, having too much fun, and we talked a little bit about it before, but
well, the fact you're wearing a shellback hat,
yeah.
So I'm from Palos Verdes.
Oh, you are,
yeah,
yeah.
So I saw it and I was like, he's like, I've had too much fun. I'm like, he lives in Manhattan Beach. No wonder you have too much fun.
I was visiting. I had a damn good time in Manhattan Beach. Yeah, it's just so. First of all, my good friend lived in Buenos Aires for several years, and she did ayahuasca 8 times, and she was like, you've got to do it. It suits your personality. And then I was kind of going through something where I wanted to make some changes, and I thought this would be a good catalyst for said changes. And boy, it was something else. People ask me about it. I'm like, was it fun? I'm like, that's not the word. You know, it was fascinating is a good word to call it.
John, I know you had a bout the morning of. Yeah. Maybe we'll give a little insight into that.
Yeah, my wife was diagnosed with breast cancer in the summer, so she had a mastectomy to get rid of, obviously, the tumor. And then she had these, like, expander things because she's pretty lean to kind of, I guess, stretch everything out. So then she had to go get a reconstruction, and everything was going great. And then she ended up getting a staph infection. And all of a sudden, I, like, picked her up from the hospital on Friday. She's all laid out. I'm supposed to leave, you know, 6 a.m. Saturday morning. And I'm like, are you going to be okay? And I'm trying to get her mom there, and it just didn't work. And I was like, I had to pull the ripcord. But what brought me to want to do it was actually the Dan Engel podcast we did for the Everyday Warrior. So Dan Engel is a research scientist, and he's the guy that kind of wrote the book on plant-based medicine, and more importantly, you know, neuroplasticity and just de-aging of the brain. And the one that really struck me was, as we age, the brain starts to compartmentalize. And then after you do these plant-based medicines, whether it be psilocybin, ayahuasca, all of a sudden all of the compartmentalized just disappears. And the brain lights up like it did when we were kids. So I looked at it from like a neurodegeneration, like a just a healing of the brain. Cool. And so I saw that, and I had never really even entertained it until I looked at like the physiology of the brain. And I was like, man, this would be cool. And then the opportunity popped up. And, you know, Shanji and I have become good friends. And I could see a lot of like the trials and tribulations, especially in whether or not he wants to admit it or not. I was a professional athlete. Retiring and then taking on this new identity is something that's extremely difficult, because you kind of identify as an athlete. And now you're all of a sudden, you're a father, you're a business owner, you're a mentor, and you're not really this like focused athlete anymore. And that's like, that was a hard transition for me. And I saw him do it. And when I asked him, he's like, oh, everything's fine. I'm like, dude, everything's not fine. Like, it's there, and whether or not, I mean, he's done very well in the transition, but it was something. And then when it popped up, I was like, Shanji, we should go on this. This would be fun. And I think you could really benefit from it.
Yeah, so it's fine for the process, you know. The process was fine. I just, like, don't know if this is for me. You know, that was a lot of the struggles. Like, is this for me? Like, am I going the right path? You know, how's that going? I remember John when we did a... That was very interesting, because I knew John, but like we did a 1 year anniversary. He came to me like, bro, I don't want to be in your shoes. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's talking about like the turbulences of being a leader. And
oh, no, I'm in your shoes, because yeah. I do the same thing with leadership. So when I showed up to your 1 year, I could see from like the outside as like somebody who's kind of similar in that position where, you know, power athlete, I got 150 coaches. You know, thousands of people around the world have taught hundreds of seminars, professional athlete. And I have events like this and I could see like the dynamic. And I don't know if anybody was there on like Team Shanji to be like, hey dude, like we got to craft this thing a little bit better so you don't get yourself in trouble later on. And so, you know, just having, you know, and he, when I earned my blue belt, Shanji made a nice comment. He's like, you know, John's been like an older brother for us in terms of training the young guys and helping him. And his older brother has since gone back to Brazil. And I know what it's like. You know, I'm the youngest of three brothers. So I kind of, you know, that's a fine role for me. I'm happy to mentor and be an older brother. But seeing that, I was like, yo, man, next time we do this, like, let's game plan the day before on exactly how this thing goes. Because there was a lot of people there that left a little butthurt because they didn't get their moment. And you either give everybody a moment or you give nobody a moment. And especially trying to, and I'm he's not a cult leader, but I'm going to say, in terms of these kind of cult of personalities, there's a lot of people that are coming because they want something, they need something. And Shanji's also this larger-than-life character. I mean,
the Michael Jordan of Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Well, and I didn't know shit about jiu-jitsu. Scotty Oates, who's a SEAL, introduced me to Shanji. Yeah. So I didn't understand, like I wasn't coming there, and then people are like moving around America to come train at Shanji's place because they want to be around greatness. And so I just don't come from that. But seeing, I'm also not going to let a friend go into a bad situation and not at least let them know about it or prepare. Mm. Not that it was a bad situation by any means, but it's a new kind of role for him. And you know, like there's a lot of times I fucked up in this world. And if I wish somebody had just said to me, like, hey, dude, slow your roll. We can do this a little bit better.
Yeah.
And I can think of like 10 different things where I've literally fucking burned it to the ground or fucked it up and done all this, where I wish somebody had been like, hey, dude, just chill out a little bit. Slow down. Let's do this a little bit better. And I think that if I can do that for my friends, then I'm happy to do it. And
well, Shanji, I mean, you're moving from one role of being one of the most elite athletes in Brazilian jiu-jitsu to now creating your own, I don't want to say, well, Six Blades, creating this franchise and this brand for which nobody trained you up to do it. So you're exercising a new set of skills, and that's, dude, I think anyone who, even when you're doing well, you're going to feel like you're failing.
Definitely.
Like everyone in all the elites I've ever met suffer from like imposter syndrome.
Dude, I deal with it daily.
So do I. I'm like, why would anyone want to listen to freaking me?
Yeah.
Why? I just don't understand.
And that was one of the things that in ayahuasca, and I think you remember me saying that one of the days that I got my breakthrough in ayahuasca, I was like, like, I don't feel I earned this. I don't feel I deserve things like that. I remember that was the first day that I in the group that we're talking about, like, I was like, I just feel like I'm not worthy of that stuff. You know what I mean? Like, why? Oh, I win a world championship. Pfft, great. What the fuck does it even matter? You know, like, am I in pain? It doesn't matter. So, like, I was very, like, numb to a lot of feelings. You know what I mean? And that's when, I guess, my healing through the process happened, because the day before, you know, I had all this sense of, like, you know, rotten from the inside and things like this. Like, why do I feel so unworthy and guilty and shame of things, you know?
You said something to me, I think it was the first day when we were talking about why you're here. And I'm like, bro, this guy is way too high in modesty and way too high in humility. And I'm like, bro, you're impacting lives. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got this massive following for what you've earned and what you're impacting lives by passing that knowledge mm-hmm. transfer to the next generation. It's great. But I want to dive in, go day by day. So day one, we all flew out on Saturday. You flew out on Saturday as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. We were in the same bus together. Yeah. And there was these two women, and they had thick Southern accents.
I called them Bama and Georgia. Yeah. They're both from Bama.
But and I heard that. Georgia. I know that accent, man. I'm from South Carolina. And I was like, where the heck are y'all from? They look like, and they're in their 40s, where they got kids and married. And they're like, we're from Dothan, Alabama. And I befriended them. I love those girls. Yeah. And they were like, our husbands would never come to something like this. And so, but that leads me to what John was talking about a second ago. You said when the guy was here that said, psychosibling and all that, and this opens your, decompartmentalizes your brain.
So when
I'm interested in
brain mapping on kids.
Yeah.
Like when something happens, they look and the brain just lights up all at once.
So,
but then as we age, the same tasks all of a sudden compartmentalize, and there's, eventually, over time, these compartments start to die, right. And that's aging. Right. And then, well, if you can do that,
we were laughing outside before this. You said you were in Amsterdam, and someone gave you a mushroom. You didn't know what it was, and you ended up going back for more years. Yeah. Was that your first experience with mushrooms?
Yeah, we thought they were portobello mushrooms. This lady came around. I swear to God, dude, this is how stupid I am, right? So we're eating these burgers at this place called Barney's Uptown, right? Like, most amazing burger. I'm drinking a margarita in Amsterdam, which was hilarious. There's like this like dude in the corner playing like this like funky, like when Shanji does the Spotify at Jits. There's like weird kind of like trance, techno, tribal, African, Brazilian, kind of like funky music. It was like the same music.
Yeah.
Like this dude was playing this world beat stuff. And we're sitting there having a great time. And this lady just comes in. She has a basket. And she's like, would you like a mushroom cap? And I was like, yeah, I'd love a portobello mushroom. Right? Because they were huge.
Yeah.
Like, every time I'd ever seen psilocybin or mushrooms or whatever. Shouldn't
have said wrong. Part you to the ballo.
Well, yeah. So whenever you see them, they're always like kind of dried and like, you know, weird. But these were like in a container and they were fresh. So I was like, oh, this is great. And she like popped open the burger, put it right on there. And I ate this big like mushroom cap like this big. Wow. Ate the rest of this burger, and which was amazing. Had fries. We're sitting there, and like 30 minutes later, I'm like looking around, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm in Tatooine at the Star Wars bar. like you guys have seen Star Wars. Yeah. Like that was like all of a sudden there's like weird people moving around. Like I'm hearing like, doo, 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 doo. And I'm like, holy.
Oh man.
Those weren't portobello mushrooms.
But you loved it.
We had a great time.
And so that leads me to.
We ended up going back there the next, like, we went and got mushroom caps every day.
Yeah.
And then we'd get lunch, we'd get a mushroom cap, and then we'd go to, like, the Van Gogh Museum. We wandered all over Amsterdam. We saw everything. Like, one of the best adventures I've ever had.
So my question is does ayahuasca, so I went in there, I've done mushrooms several times, and I've been asked, and I think my answer is yes, does it help to have some experience with psychedelics before you go in and do ayahuasca? And I'm going back to the girls from Alabama. They had trouble getting enlightened or seeing what they came there to confront.
But isn't that a cultural thing?
I don't know.
Like I was thinking on like the, there's like a cultural aspect and there's like a kind of a cultural vulnerability. And I just read this. I sent the link to Shanji for the immortality code, or sorry, the immortality key. book. But I really think that there is like a cultural piece to this where, like, you know, when I mentioned ayahuasca and this adventure to Shanji, he's like, I'm from the Amazon. This is part of my people.
Okay.
Like, he had this like cultural association. He knew what it was. And this is something that's good because it's from where I am. If you're from Alabama, this is like stoner, hippie, Grateful Dead. Yeah. Like, this is the antithesis of who we are in America.
Yeah.
You know, we're, you know, we're going to, you know, fried catfish and beers and, you know, this is who we are and we're America and 4th of July barbecues. Like, ayahuasca might be as...
The South will rise again.
I mean, but that's as far away. And so in this book, The Immortality Key, they get into why there was this kind of... attack on like psychedelics, and more importantly, like what was this systematic like making of it illegal? And it really came down to, it was a big push by the church, and it's dope. If Shanji reads it, he'll love it. But what I really liked is that when I've talked to people about whether it be psilocybin or ayahuasca or these things, people are either have like some like cultural okay with it because maybe a gateway or whatnot, or they're just so opposed from it. I would never do that. You know, and it's so weird to me. I'm like, it seems like another adventure, another great story to tell.
Well, looking back, I really think it helped that I'd had an experience before. I was able to sort of let it happen, surrender, as they would tell you. And in the back of my mind, I always knew, I was like, okay, this is crazy, but I'm okay. I'm going to be fine. So I think some of the people there were unable to let go a little bit. And we encountered them the day after, you know.
So, you know, first I want to say Rhythmia won the resort. You land in Liberia, Costa Rica.
Yeah.
They're there to greet you. You jump in a van. It's about an hour and a half drive.
Oh,
is that accurate? We got Will filming. Will was with us, of course, filming the whole thing because we're doing a documentary.
Yeah, because Tamarindo is about an hour.
Yeah.
The Which resort, is a beautiful drive if you've ever done it.
So
it's a beautiful drive.
You get to drive. Beautiful. I mean, the one thing is when you go there, you're not, unless you're staying in Costa Rica, you're not going to really experience Costa Rica. Mm. The grounds were, and correct me if I'm wrong, they said it was an old Marriott resort. So it is a 5-star resort. Everything about it was top notch. Eclectic crowd.
Yeah.
I mean, you had foreigners that flew from, I think like one was like Denmark or something. He was a famous dancer. You know, people from all over the United States, Canadians.
A lot of L.A. people.
A lot of L.A. people, of course. That's not...
it's very cool to do ayahuasca in L.A., right. Especially if you're a CEO of a startup.
Right.
There you go. So he was an eclectic crowd. In all, was it 70 or 80 people?
I think we'd say about 70.
I thought it was 80.
Roughly. Yeah. Okay, so we're in the ballpark.
A lot of women. A lot of, like...
Are they because doing the, 70 the Alabama people
girl,
every week?
Because the Alabama girl was number 67... Whoa. To the Washington,
nice.
And three girls were on the last day because they are in their period. So I think it was 70. I don't think it was 80.
Okay.
But anyway,
80 is so that's the one thing I'll say. Having done Ibogaine, it was with six people in the room. Had it been an experience where it's like us four, maybe two others, it would have been a little more intimate and enjoyable. I know we start out day one was like yoga in the morning. That's where we met, cracking jokes in the back. And then you're going through all these prep classes, which they do a great. Dwayne and JJ are hysterical, and they did a good way of adding humor to everything and getting people to drop their guard. Of like, they basically said, "Hey, you're going to be puking your brains out. You may defecate yourself," and that did happen.
Somebody shit themselves?
Oh, a lot of people did.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people did.
In a hammock. Remember that guy?
We're going to get to those.
You know, I'm gonna write that down on my phone as like top one things that I don't want to do is poop myself in a hammock.
No,
that's really just like a strainer.
One guy got hogtied on the lawn. He freaked out and cussed out everybody and said, "I am God."
Nice guy.
Great really guy. Nice guy. Yeah.
So it was like, bro, this is a comedy. I think Shep's talking about writing a screenplay.
I am. I think it would be hilarious.
Yeah. You could actually do a TV show where people know they're going to come to ayahuasca and film it and just get like some famous, like hilarious comedian to interview them while they're in their ayahuasca state.
Or just do a Mystery Science Theater. You remember where they're showing the movie and like the robots are then they're commenting on everything? You just have like comics, like the, you know, the Brett Kreischer outline and being like, "Oh, look at this guy. He just shit himself in a hammock. Don't shit yourself in a hammock."
So they do a good job, even from the shamans. We step into night one and they say, "Hey, start with two cups."
Yeah.
They give you one cup. everyone goes back and focuses on their breathing for an hour, and they say, hey, we'll bring you back for a second cup. So they make the announcement and everyone gets in line. I'll say the one thing for me is like 70 people, you got people puking all over the place and all this stuff. The second cup was done, they basically have a blocked off area, and they've got, I call them orderlies. They have about like 10 to 15 orderlies that are not on ayahuasca, because the shamans are doing ayahuasca with you.
Oh yeah.
And the fact that the shamans are doing ayahuasca with you is fucking hilarious. But what
don't they have to?
I guess that's part of the
Shanji. Yeah. Is that, I mean, as our as a representative of the Amazon?
Okay, the original practice of ayahuasca, the subject did not drink the ayahuasca. That's was the original way to do it. So whoever drank the ayahuasca was actually shaman. Mm. And then he would get the information from the ethereal, and then he would go and pass it to you. That's when, not until like, you know, years later, that they found out that also if the person do it too. So that creates a connection. It's almost like you want something and I'm not.
In Portuguese or in Brazil, like what's the spirit? Like what's the, they take the ayahuasca and they're communicating with who? Is there a name? Is there an entity?
No, there's not. It's God. You know, God. Whatever comes from there. Some people have different names for it. But like I said, just the original practice, who took the ayahuasca was the actual shaman or the like pajé the healer, right? Not the subject.
Well, that was like in, Delphi, when they would go. They would like come and they'd ask a question, and then the girls would go in and they would inhale these chemicals. I mean, they found like whatever they were inhaling, like it had psychedelic, like gas like properties.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they would ramble, and then the guy would take it down and then give you the question.
But I was curious about what they eat. Like,
that thing it reminded me of like guys in Yemen, caught, but usually it's like a big ball. They had some green, like, substance.
So it wasn't a zing or zin?
It wasn't a zin, which I ran out of ons. I use ons. And I kept, Will, I'm like, hey, man, can you hook me up with one patch? But, I mean, you've got the female shamans like spitting in a cup like they're in the old South, like chewing tobacco. Yeah, how many cups in the first night did you guys take?
I took 3. I never took more than whatever they gave.
I took 4 the first night. And once I took that 4th one, I felt it just like coat my body. And I was like, fuck, here we go. And I wrote in my journal. I kept a journal. It's so funny looking back. I wrote, why must you always lick the jar? And that was something. was something that I needed to confront. Excess. And so the first night I jumped into the deep end. Yeah.
Well, one of my favorite movies is The Dead Poets Society.
Yeah, I love that.
And he's in there and he talks about what a dead poet is, somebody that cracks the bone and sucks the marrow of life.
Right, right.
So yeah. I'm appreciative that you are crack the marrow and suck the bone.
As we say, mediocrity is for you know what.
Yeah. Well, that, or what was it? The other one is one lick of the lollipop of mediocrity and suck for life.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. I like this. I like you guys.
What is it? Moderation's for Cowards. That's another one.
Oh no!
You know, Mike constantly every morning texts me something about having to carry boats or something.
Yeah, that's me, man.
Well, it's Goggins is your man. God,
he is. He's my. He is the source of all my inspiration throughout my entire career. Yeah. Goggins, what should boats. I do in this combat situation?
Carry these boats,
even though you've never been in it.
But when we got there, they do put you with the yoga and the breathing. They put you, but that's before you take the medicine.
The prep work.
They kind of put you in this sort of zen. Like they want you to be, it's interesting.
Do you guys think
put your guard down.
That the amount of people there, like having 70 people and new and being in this kind of, I almost wonder if it's like eating lunch in a cafeteria.
A little bit. A little bit.
It's almost maybe overwhelming to have that many people.
That was one of the sort of points for me, is that it was too many people. So when I took my second cup, I went and they've got some hammocks in that blocked off area. So I went and laid in the hammock, and they kept coming up. They're always one of the orderlies would be like, the shaman wants to invite you back in. And I'd say, tell the shaman I appreciate the invite. I'm good right here just staring at the sky. And it was beautiful. I mean, you've got all gorgeous. The stars, which you don't see in Austin.
Yeah.
And they would keep coming up. And it was on the second night, this she's nice. She's like, hey, this shaman would like to, she really would like to invite you back in. I said, hey, listen, I'm enjoying my experience right here. I'm not going to go into there where you hear like five people puking at once to that sound. I'm like, I'm in my own state. I'm on my own journey. Just, yeah, I'd appreciate it if you'd leave me be. And she's like, okay. And she walked back.
I'm not real good with people throwing up.
No.
You'd have a tough time.
No, I like,
you're a sympathetic puker.
No, but, I get like, you know, like, well, you've gone out with people that are big throw. Like, if I hear it, I'm like, oh God, I don't feel good.
Yeah.
Like, not that I'm going to puke, but I don't like to hear people puke. And yeah. Then when you have kids, like, I remember one point, like, my daughter was throwing up. She was projectile shitting out. Like, everything was coming out of both ends. And I was like, oh God. I'm way better, like, cleaning up poop than I am cleaning up throw up. So, like, I kind of, my wife's like, I'm the exact opposite. I'll clean up throw up. I'm like, we're perfect match.
Perfect. What'd you guys experience the first night, if you don't mind sharing?
The first day?
The your first ayahuasca trip, Monday night?
Monday was, I was kind of nervous, and I thought I overeat it a little bit for lunch, but I don't think I did. There was a lot of, like, stomach head. I was aware, basically. Well, Wednesday was a day that I was, like, you know, on the Matrix, but I was still aware what's happening. I never went out. I never had pinta, never had consultations, zero. First day, I had a little bit of, like, the visions of, like, snakes and worms in my stomach. but, like, yeah, it was very, like, every time I would, like, maybe get into my body, my head would come. So that was just, like, this argument between my gut and my brain. And I guess the whole thing is about, you know, healing the heart. I'm like, okay, where are you, heart? Where are you, spirit? Like, why don't you just get in the middle of this and fix this? This is pissing me off a little bit. I was very also in tune with the people around me, you know what I mean? For some reason, I didn't mind the amount of people, because almost like even the girl sides for me was irrelevant, because you don't go there. I only there only the last night. I'm like, hey, does this people walk around here? Because maybe I will, you know? But yeah, I was like basically with the guys around me and the middle and then there. For a moment, that was one kid, Arjun. I was like, I was laying down. Hear like his breath going a little like... And I'm like, okay, he's in trouble. He's going through something. And I had my eyes closed, and I looked up. He was, like, going through this ethereal place in, and I saw there's, like, five shamans on top of him, and he's pulling an arrow, and then they take him out. I'm like, okay, I guess I was there with him. So, I don't know. I think I was very into, and I don't know. I think I was kind of almost like the shaman helpers a little bit, because everything, like, one thing that was very interesting, because I'll hear something like this. I'm like, okay, it's going to be a puke, blah. You know, I was very good at that. That was one night with this guy. He was, like, hilarious. You know what I mean? I think that's when he was talking about his excesses. You know what I mean? Like, he kept saying, like, I don't need this, but I want this.
I'm going to do this, but I'm going to do it.
And then his arms are open.
No, okay,
I think that was, like,
fine.
The third night, maybe. I think that was one night he was right by me, and then the shamans were right on him, and he's, like, laying down.
Oh, yeah.
He's a huge dude, too. His arms were, like, in three beds. One thing that I, like, even asked one of the shamans, like, because I don't do well with, like, soft beds. And, man, that freaking bed literally didn't get me. I would rather be on the floor. But, yeah. But, yeah, the first night was very much like that. That's when I came to realize, like, am I just dormant? Like, is my spirit dormant? Like, am I unable to feel anything? And then I started, like, reminding my brother, because my brother, man, he wears his hearts on his sleeves. You know, he's not a, you know, he's very intelligent, high intelligent, but everything he does, like, I've seen my brother cry, like, literally 100 times. You know what I mean? I'm like, I don't get do it. This. Yeah. And it was very similar to my last ayahuasca experience in Brazil, where I had the same feeling. I was very in my head. And then it was interesting, because when I left the room, that's when I had only psychedelics. You know, the whole DMT of the ayahuasca came in, and I was driving a car. But, like, 5 hours later, I'm like, oh, I'm fine. Let's go have food. Yeah, let's go have food. In the middle of the thing, and my friend goes like, hey, turn right. I'm like, turn right where? You know, because then it goes like this. I cannot see the road. I cannot, like, you know, like, relate to my brain. The road is like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, kind of like, and the road kind of just gave me the right path. It was very similar to that. That's when I go back the whole idea of disconnection, right? Which come back to the whole things, like, you know, show me who I am, you know, Beat my soul, heal my heart. You know what I mean? And go back to that. I'll say, okay, I guess I'm in the right path, whatever that is, because I'm starting exactly where I finished. And that's what I really liked about the first night. And that's why on Tuesday, I felt like, you know what? If I'm going to fucking do this, I'm just going to say it. You know what I mean? And that's when I was able to open up. And I'm not really a really open person to talk about the way I feel. You know, now I'm like, even annoying because I talk about the way I feel all the time. Because now I don't care. You know, I come to a point, again, I'm not here to please anybody. I'm here to lead. If you're going to judge me for who I am, get the fuck away from me. You know, that's literally,
Well, when you're competing at the level John did, there's a compartmentalization.
A lot.
That there's no time for feelings right now. Whether you messed up that play, it's over. You're moving forward.
Well, to the point where I thought I was emotionally broken for a number of years.
Yeah.
And so it was funny. When I retired from the NFL, Dr. Amen had this big study of, and they were looking at, like, NFL players for, like, brain issues. So the part of my brain that was damaged was over here on the left. But when I went through all their psychological evaluations, they told me I had the emotional intelligence of, like, a third grader. And which I think is funny, but they also, and so like when we went into the meeting, they were like, hey, we got good news and bad news. I'm like, oh, what's the bad news? Like, well, you have brain damage, and they have the emotional intelligence of a third grader. And I was like, what's the good news? And they're like, you're actually the smartest person we've ever tested. And I was like, ever in the clinic or just of the NFL guys? They're like, just the NFL guys. I'm like, it's like, man, like the best looking kid in the ugly class, right? I was like, this is all bad news. And so then, like, I left and I called my brother, and my brother's like, first of all, dude, you've been the same fucking emotionally detached moron your entire life. And he's like, and I'm the same moron too. So I like didn't necessarily worry. And obviously have like gone through like this healing and fixed a lot of all the brain damage and all that. But I think for me, having kids somehow like connected me more, because almost to be good at football, there has to be like a weird disconnect. It's probably like similar to jujitsu where you're like, I'm going to go out and hurt these people. And then I'm going to go out next Sunday and keep hurting people, and I'm not going to feel bad about it. So I got paid money to fucking beat people up. And so there's like an interesting, almost like detaching, where if you like actually emotionally felt bad about what you did to people, I just felt like it was easier to detach. And so you kind of just shut that part down. And then when you have kids, especially when you have daughters, and this is where I think the universe doesn't give you what you want. It gives you what it thinks you need. And it gave me twin daughters for whatever lesson it's here to teach me, which is probably like to not be such a emotionless, disconnected fucking asshole. And, you know, the one thing that is very interesting about jujitsu, it's very close. You know, you're in, you know, in these kind of like close positions, but also to get good at jujitsu, you have to take care of your training partners, and you have to have a good training partner that wants you to get as good as them. Whereas in football, I'm just a fucking bat that just beats the fuck out of things. And I don't care who my training partner is. I'm just going to keep hitting them until they break. Whereas in jiu-jitsu, I can't do that. And I think that's what I really like is that I was telling somebody the other day, I'm like, we were there on Monday night, and I was rolling with that guy, and I felt his hip pop, the guy with the brown belt that I was rolling with. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't, you know, we were doing the stack and staple. Dude, his hips were so tight. I was like, dude, I'm going to fucking tear your groin. You're going to get hurt. Like, don't. I'm not the right dude for you in this moment. I'm too big. Mm-hmm. And he was like, no, we're fine. And then Shanji came over. I was going to, like, fucking break that dude, snap him like a twig. And I don't want to hurt.
That's how he take care of his dream partner.
Yeah. But Shanji's really good because he's like, comma, because he knows. He's like, you know, fuck, dude. I still bench, like, you know, 400-plus pounds and squat 500 pounds and have the ability to snap people in half. And it's like, well, I can't do that at jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, because in jiu-jitsu, he needs to find the middle range of his strength, right? Because football is 0 to 100, 0 to collision. And you're talking about years, and now he's talking about his brain damages. Yeah. You know, so jiu-jitsu is like from 0 to maybe 10, to 0, maybe 20, you know what I mean? So that is that reading process, you know, what John, like, and I understand because he doesn't want to get smashed. He doesn't want to give an inch. You know what I mean? And then what's going to be his first reaction? Collision. You know what I mean? I'm going to just, you know what I mean? Smash. So, and that's why I say calma means like, hey, you don't have to go 0 to 100. You know, it's okay to go 20. You know what I mean? But that's okay. It's a process. Yeah. You know, you're talking about, you know, how many years on the NFL, whatever the energy he was into, the stress, you know what I mean? Like I said, and it goes back to whatever ayahuasca or psilocybin will do to your brain, because now you wired that way, you know what I mean? And then it goes back to what he was talking about when maybe do psilocybin is good for ayahuasca, because it kind of like paves the way.
Yeah.
Because if your brain, whatever has to be connected, it's dormant which goes back to even to my idea of the spirit. My spirit was dormant. Like, now you have ayahuasca, and ayahuasca wants to go, and the cultural, whatever, social aspects about your life, your brain is not gonna, it's gonna shut off.
It's gonna resist.
As strong as ayahuasca is, but then if you have something a little more mild, you know what I mean? Like when they say, like, okay, give the person like a little challenge where they can win. Now they feel they feel empowered, they can win something else. So I think it goes to there, you know.
I want to get to Mr. Four Cups, but I gotta say this. For me, I left the first night sort of pissed off because I had a very similar experience that you did. But watching you, so I sat in that hammock and I watched everyone. I was a watcher.
So like and a voyeur.
Seriously, a little like
weird.
I'm setting up cameras in the bathrooms. But you were freaking hilarious. And I would just sit there and watch. So he would carry almost like a blankie. Because you had these blankets on the bed. Almost like he was a child with his
cartoon,
blankie.
That's the cartoon. The
guy has a Linus.
Yeah, Linus.
So he would, I called him part of the grass people. Because he would walk onto the grass, and it was almost like a scene out of Step Brothers. You know, but he's trying to bury the other one, and then they start wrestling on the grass. He would lay down in the grass and start wrestling and doing, like, somersaults and like, putting his hands in the air, lying on the ground, like, blah, 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 blah. It was hilarious watching you.
Yeah. That was, so I had this, well, I had two visions. One, I had the amusement park ride with the swings that hang down, and then it gets going, and the swings go outward. And I had friends and family in the swings, and I was the pole. I was the center. And that told me, see, it's very intuitive. You have to connect the dots. That's how I see it, at least. And if I wanted novelty in my life, I needed to be stable. I needed to be dependable and reliable.
Yeah.
And so that was something that I was like, oh. And I was like, I've been unstable. I'm risking everybody I know and love around me. And so that was interesting. And then the night you saw me, or when you saw me, the shaman came up to everybody and, you know, blew this liquid on you, like, Pwah! And then they go out, and they rub you down and touch your head. And you're just like, oh my God. But she skipped me, or she came to me and she goes, how are you? And I said, I'm good. She goes, you are good. God bless you. And then she skipped me and went to the other person. And I thought, at first I was pissed. I wanted to get the thing. And I realized that I already had what she was doling out. And then I went through a whole thing of need and want and how it's a bottomless pit. And I really struggled with that need and want. And I was tearing myself apart out on the lawn and really going through it, man, and yelling at myself, fuck you, you asshole. And no, no, no. And really confronted that. And that's when you saw me.
I'll get to the part of the second night. I put like a sociology to people in their ayahuasca journey, but I'll get to that.
But no, Mike, first I want to tell John, Mike was on patrol the whole night, dude. He was walking around like he was lit, like we were in the Kandahar Valley or something. And I watched him because you have like moments of clarity or maybe chillness because you go through something. Mother ayahuasca invades your body and you struggle and then you throw up or you go to the bathroom. And then it's kind of over, and you're dormant. And I would watch Mike patrolling outside and stare up at the stars. And I was like, man, we are safe. If anything else, we are safe.
Well, definitely something like that. It's always the people in the room that makes you safe. And I kept thinking to myself, if something goes wrong, man, I gotta hang out with Mike.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think I'll turn into the doctor, so I'll go with Mike. Because I know he's on it.
And the whole time, I'm like, God damn, I wish John was here, because I would love to see how he would, what sociology he would fall into.
I'm sad I didn't get to go, but I also realized the universe was working against me.
Yeah.
And I knew if I did go, I'd show up and like Mother Ayahuasca would show up and be like, hey dude, you just abandoned your wife and family.
You're a horrible human being.
So now we're going to fucking torture you. Yeah. Yeah. And then all of a sudden I'd see like, so I always imagined it, and maybe I'm wrong, but do you guys remember in Zoolander when they're going through the reprogramming and they're like, here's my little dog, and like all these visions?
Yeah.
I'd be like Shanti being like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? You know, stop doing this.
Calma. What was your sociology? Who were the people in the sociology?
Let's get to the second night, but you know what? I was a little pissed until, so the night starts at what, six?
Yeah.
p.m., six, 5 or 6. Uh-huh. And at about 1:30, they sort of say, hey, the ceremony's over and we're going to share. And I was still sort of pissed. And then people start sharing. And I will say this, and I think we've talked about this. They share a story about the founder when he, Jerry, when he went through his, well, he did Ibogaine in Costa Rica, which is much more intense.
Yeah.
And he came to the realization that, I think his grandfather?
Yeah.
Sexually assaulted him.
Well, his uncle.
And I think, and again, that one that's horrid. But I think it implanted in certain people's minds. And so we had a lot of people to share. And you're actually, you start to develop, and we talked about this yesterday, and you use the perfect word, gratitude.
Yeah.
Because in I think we talked to the realization, I'm like, bro, I had a great parents, a good childhood. Yeah, I went to war, but I think I've come to some level of, you know, odds. Or not odds, but...
like you've come to terms with it.
Come to terms with it. And I'm hearing these stories and you're just like
horrific stuff. Yeah.
And you're like, God, your heart screams out to the people.
Well, especially as a parent, like, whenever I hear, like any of that stuff as a parent, all I can, you know, you compartmentalize it or just kind of pull it on and think like, what if these were my kids and I wasn't there for them? And then all of a sudden, like, you know, something's wrong and they're in their 30s and you're, you know, aging adult and you got to go and they're like, Dad, this happened. And you're like, where was I?
Yeah.
How come I wasn't more present? And so, you know, one of the things with like, you guys know, I mean, you don't know, but my neighbor's dog attacked my daughter. And when the dog, big dog, 130-pound dog, like knocked her down, that week at Jits, they had learned to do spider guard. So she put her chin down and kind of like grabbed the dog and like was kicking him off and fought that dog off. Wow. And that Anatolian Shepherds have killed a lot of people. And that little girl fought. I mean, he got her face pretty good. But when I pulled her out, she's like, Dad, I did jujitsu on the dog. And I was like, shit. Like, wow. You know, and so Shanji and Alex, who was her coach, I like, you know, I mean, I do those, like, there's nothing I wouldn't do for those guys.
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, bringing her there. And so, you know, the universe works in interesting ways. So, I mean, that piece of like, you know, like preparing your kids. And so when I hear this stuff, I'm like,
can you imagine abusing? Where were the parents? Yeah, I mean, well, people are getting
one, like, molested. Where were the parents? Yeah. And then on top of it, when you hear that the parents abuse the kids.
It's amazing. It's
like, so awful. I spend my entire life taking care of my kids and, like, managing them and making sure they're happy and taking care of them. And then you think, like, how could you do that to a child? And then you realize it was probably because it was done to them and they're fucked up and, you know, these other things. But, like, as a parent, like, I wasn't sexually assaulted. I wasn't abused. I was in a bathroom when I was probably, like, 6 or 7 and some dude grabbed at my dick. like... To this day, like, I still walk into a bathroom 40 years later, and I still feel a little bit of anxiety, and I, like, when I go to the urinal, I stand there, I'm like, somebody fucking grabs me, I'm gonna fucking kill him, right? But, like, I was probably, like, that happened to me as a kid, and I remember telling my brother and I, like, looked, and we went and told my dad ran back there looking for the dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's, like, the only weird shit that ever happened to me, and on top of it, like, I can never imagine doing that to people, but also, like, what's so fucked up in those people that they would do that to other kids? So when you hear these things... I almost just want to kind of like give him a hug and be like, I'm sorry that it happened. And two, like the people that were there to protect you didn't do a good job.
Correct.
And I don't like.
You can't be all places at all times.
And so that's what you have to do is you have to prepare your kids to the moment you're not there. And that's what I liked about jujitsu. And I talk to my daughters constantly. I'm like, this stuff isn't about when I'm here. It's when I'm not here. And you have to be smart. You have to. And the world's an ugly place. Mm. And there's people. You guys can't go through life pretending this is a kind of gentle, but you also don't want to, you know, rob your children of what it's like to be a child, but you also can't pretend that we live in a fucking happy-go-lucky kind of place.
No.
And then when you hear these things, it breaks my heart. Like, I there aren't many things that make me cry, but when I hear those things, especially from kids, and they talk about this, like, you, like, can't help but tear up.
Well,
and, I just don't know how to process that stuff other than just be like, I'm so sorry. Like the people that were there that were, you know, like were supposed to take care of you, didn't take care of you. And I don't know how to fix that for the world.
If ayahuasca helped people heal from that, then
big time.
That is amazing.
This girl, the first night was going crazy. Just, I mean, it was really painful to hear her scream. And it was like she was being attacked by wild dogs. And I went and found her the next day. This is a testament to rhythmia as well. Like everybody really lets down their defenses. Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't know you, but are you okay? And she said, my mother committed suicide when I was a teenager, and I was dealing with that. I was like, geez. So there's a lot of pain and a lot of abuse, and if it helps that, I mean, that's a beautiful thing, you know?
Yeah, and right on the first night, I found out that, and that's when I started to realize we are all part of each other's healing process.
Yes.
Because there's always like, I was in tune with a lot of people, you know what I mean? I had this one girl that she confessed to me later that within her journey, I was her father one day, I was her child one day.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was very, very much like,
I can feel that.
And we were very like connected. And the interesting thing, I asked her, like, what night was I your son? And she's like, on Tuesday. And that was the night I saw myself as a little kid, and she was right by me.
Oh, my God. Kidding.
Yeah.
That's wild.
That's pretty crazy how all that goes, you know, like even with our John, like looking at you, I'm like, okay, he's going through this. And then he tells me, oh, yeah, man, because I'm ex. So that's a lot of this collective healing, you know what I mean? And that's when I came, like, was on Wednesday. We can talk about that when I stood up because, you know, the girl said that thing on Tuesday, whatnot. But that's for Wednesday. Let's go back to Tuesday.
But remember the guy, we were having lunch, and this guy we really liked. And we were talking to him by the pool, and he was like, my dad really, really was a bad man.
Yeah.
And he started crying. He was a cool guy. Like, and
Ohio, right?
Yeah. We went up and gave him a hug, and it was like, Hunter, oh, man.
Like a dude. Just. Like a big time hunter,
like a bro.
Yeah. So, we'll get into Tuesday night.
So you know, I mean, I've, obviously the trip to Rhythmia was more like, hey, they're doing this documentary. But I was one thing I was fixated on is the people who reached out to Rhythmia to come by themselves, paid the money, like bought the ticket because they, you know, something in their life happened that they needed to go. Like this was their. Like home run saving deal, like they show up and like this guy, like how did, I keep wondering like what happens in your life that all of a sudden this looks and you think I have to do this to clear this or.
Possibly because everything else they've tried hasn't worked.
Right.
But in what do you think the percentage of the 70 people that were repeat? Because somebody was there who was on their like eighth time.
I know a guy that goes four times a year.
Yeah.
Doles out that money.
He goes four times a year. He puts some money aside. He's been like 16 times.
Yeah. Mm. Wait, there was like
30-40%?
Yeah, 30%.
You would think that's an industry that doesn't have repeatability. They're doing something right.
They're doing people, something right.
But then again, my question is, at what point are you replacing? It's like, hey, I was an alcoholic, I went to Rhythmia, it cured me. But you keep coming back. So have you now replaced alcohol with ayahuasca?
Yeah, maybe.
Or maybe the fact that they don't, I don't know, like, can they not tap into any of, at least what I have read when I was kind of prepping for this ayahuasca deal was, like, I think there's, like, a shell that people have, and ayahuasca breaks through the shell, right? So then, like, once you go through that, you should be more able to have these conversations and be maybe a little bit more emotionally in tune. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is the fact that these people have to keep going back as they keep putting the shell up. I think the thing that's probably, when people ask me, they're like, how do you think you cured it? I'm like, it's probably a podcast. The fact that I've had to do 800 podcasts and sit and talk about all this stuff. Like, I think that did more to breaking down my mental shell and doing all this other stuff than ayahuasca ever could. Because the fact I've had to have so many, like, interesting conversations over the last decade, like, I think, like, that's a level of sharing and healing in this.
Sure. It's almost like a psychologist that taps into this crap method.
My wife's like, you should go talk to somebody. I'm like, I do, three times a week for hours. Well, I was on a three-hour podcast yesterday.
But if you go back to the way that's done on the Amazon, if you look at Santo Daime, they do ceremonies every month.
You mean people are doing ayahuasca every month?
Every month. Like if you go to Santo Daime, it's like a religious...
What's Santo Daime?
Santo Daime, like Santo.
Santo
Daime. Like Saint. It's a congregation in Brazil, and there's a União do Vegetal, so the communion is the ayahuasca, right? So,
which is the actual, when you look at Christian mysticism, based upon that book, The Immortality Key, the original Eucharist was psychedelic. They found it in the wine, and they found it in the Eucharist. So that was actually the connection with God, because they would take it and they could converse. And then the Catholic Church came in and figured out,
wow,
we need to be the conduit, so we got to get rid of this.
Yeah. So when I did it, like, usually they don't say, like, oh, are you going to go do ayahuasca? Like, I didn't even know ayahuasca was called ayahuasca until a little bit later. Because, oh, are you going to do the Santo Daime? Because that's how they call it, Santo Daime. It's a church. You go inside. There's music going on.
Is this in the Amazon?
Yeah. It's like, if you look in, just look at Santo Daime, and then they use ayahuasca as a communion. And then they do ceremonies every month. And then there's, like, you know, when it's like 12-hour ceremonies. Like, my first experience was in a Santo Daime. I walked in. It's a house. There's a table. There's people with music. And then there's, like, this kind of, like, native chantings, you know, that you don't really understand. Even I'm Brazilian, like, there's some things I don't understand what they're saying, because it's just like a very raw language. You just sit down, same thing. There's a whole thing, you can't cross your feet. Like, there's a whole way you sit on the table, like, from hierarchy. Like, because I was new and, like, visitor, I was right at the end, and there's the guy that guards. And then it's like, you know, we start, and there's a music. First you start the music, and then they do the first ayahuasca. You sit down, and then they shut everything off, and then you go through your things, and people go out and puke outside, go back, and then they start the music again, and then it goes back. It's all chanting. Like, you know, it's all chanting.
So before we get to the second night, I'll hit two other things. One, Rythmia does a really good job of creating the community you referred to. Everyone's letting down the guard. Everyone's there to become a better version of themselves, heal. So people get to start really knowing each other, and the way they set up restaurant areas, everyone's got to sit in the same sort of area together. And so you're having conversations, you have breakfast, they cut you off after lunch because they want you to fast a little. And the more food you have in your stomach, the higher the likelihood you're going to be vomiting. But they did a great job with that. The food, and Will even hit me after we were about 7 days back. We're like, hey, are you still, it was like not solid for an entire week. So it's all whole foods. And the proteins they had were just, this was my, again, another complaint. Like, most of the fish was tilapia, and what do they call it? Like, tilapia is like
trash fish.
Or the cockroach of the sea. Yeah. And then, like, the chicken, little chicken chunks.
So when we were kids, we would go spearfishing in Catalina, and they would come out with, like, the trash barge. And they would start, like, just basically dumping the trash, and all the tilapia would show up. So when the trash barge was out, it would clear all the tilapia so we could spearfish the good fish. And when we would see people, like, you know, it'd be like Mexican cats on boats, like, catching tilapia, we'd be like, ugh. And these bodybuilders, like, oh, the tilapia is wonderful. Like,
so, my complaint was the food is tasty. They do a good job. Kudos to the chefs. Like, hey, can I get a ribeye? Wagon. Like, just, can I get some meat? Like, or just, like, hey, salmon. Like a salmon steak or swordfish, anything. Because I know you guys have access to seafood. So that was a little bit of a letdown. I don't know what you guys thought about the food.
Besides the chicken and the fish, I think, like, the yuca was really good.
Yeah.
I thought the salad was really good. Everything was really good. Yeah. I think, like, the biggest issue they have with, like, the whole idea of, like, the diet is the protein. How they take up protein. Because, oh, it's a vegan, a vegetarian, whatever that is. So, yeah, I think if they would do a little salmon, a little
like good salmon. Yeah, like salmon steak. Like, so they went too far.
Like, did you guys, Tony Robbins, you know, has his retreats. We had a guy on the podcast that was one of his, like, right-hand guys. This guy, Peter Sayer, actually met him through Doc Parsley. And as I was talking to him, I was like, you know, like, these experiences people have, he's like, oh, it's, and he gave me kind of the back end kind of hack code of, like, how Tony works and this, and there's people that are mic'd, and they go around, they interview everybody, and they strike up conversations, and there's a room so that when Tony gets out there, he knows who to go to. But one of the biggest things they found was that when you go to his retreat, it's all vegetables, it's all plant-based, because they found that when they do that, people are more susceptible to a life change. People, when they eat meat and steaks and that, are, like, a little bit more, like, I don't know, it seems like bullshit.
Yeah.
So what they found, and they know this from researching cults, every cult is usually vegetarian. Hmm. Meat eaters and people that eat a lot of protein tend to be not as easily kind of, like, cold into a pen, let's say.
Interesting.
And one of the things is that there's a change in the brain and the chemistry. When you go from eating to all of a sudden eating all vegetables, you become a little more docile and a little bit more open to suggestion.
That's why the Biden administration is pushing to eliminate all. I'm kidding. My biggest staple for the week was coffee. Like, which they cut off after 12. I was drinking so much. I'm like, oh, they have coffee.
Thank God. They said about coffee. Costa Rican coffee.
It was great coffee.
I had coffee until like 3 in the afternoon. Like, of course, I was like disciplined. Like, okay, I don't want to be all, so I'll cut out the coffee. But they had coffee. They had, the juices are nice.
Yeah, juices good.
Yeah, but I think like the thing, like I think for the whole idea of the food too, because like if I eat a big ribeye and I'm like, oh, like the serotonin, whatever, like all your brains, like hormones are like super like, okay, I'm satisfied.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I guess if you come to ayahuasca ceremony satisfied with life, then you're like, okay, what else there is to be? I've never eaten a steak
and been like, man, I'm so happy. Like you eat a steak, you're like, oh God, I got to eat this.
All right, let's go to Brazilian barbecue, guys.
Night two. This is what I call, this is where the shit show started, because there were some great stories.
It was go deeper.
It was go deeper. And so they do a good job.
Now you like get 2 hours. Six cups.
This is where people, they say, hey, if you don't feel like you need another, take another. But they do a good job of debriefing the night before and telling people to go deeper. But this is where I had 3 cups on this night. You had how many?
Two.
Sanjay, how many cups did you have the second night?
Three.
Yeah. This is where I went the deepest. But I think I also had the ability to be very observant of what was going on around me. And this is where the sociology came in, and it totally made sense from my observations from the first night. You had the sky people, which are the people in the hammocks, which I belong to. I think I've said this before. You had the grass people, which Shep led. You had the white walkers, the people that just walked back and forth, like just the walking dead. You had the screamers, or what I call the crazy Joes, that would just yell out, fuck. And then you had the repeaters, somebody who would repeat what they would say. You had the fire people that just hung around the fire. Of course, you had the zombies that just stayed in the main building on their
mattress.
It was, people fell into it. And then you have Arjun. Arjun was freaking hilarious. And this guy is so nice. Indian, right?
Indian, but American.
But American.
Like Dot, not Feather?
Dot, not Feather. Yeah. And Arjun must have went, he must have had like 10 cups. So he goes running like off the premises, and you see the orderlies, like one, some of the orderlies don't know what to do, and then like the more, I guess, masculine guys start running after him, and he's yelling, I'm God, I will murder you. Like they're having to restrain him, and eventually, almost like security at a concert, they only have zip ties.
Yeah.
They had to hog tie him. And he's like, I'll destroy you when I get out of these, and I'm God. And then he'd be like, Daddy? But you just had all hell broke loose.
He was like, thanks a lot, Dad. And boy, how embarrassed was he the next day? Oh, he had hat in hand. He was like, what happened? I was like, dude, it's fine.
No one's going to judge you.
We got a video of it.
Yeah. I wish.
Well, which is good because we could actually make some sort of humor of those things too.
Yeah.
And I wasn't like, oh, you think you're God. I said, bro, you're so hilarious. Like, he's like, oh, really? Was I?
Well, what I observed about him is he really led with his chin. His hand was raised and he was gung ho, and Mother Ayahuasca was like, nah, dude. And just slapped him upside the head.
Don't you appreciate that he's like, hey, if I'm going in,
yeah,
I'm going in the fucking way.
Of course I do.
You know, I'm in for a penny, in for a pound.
Like, yeah. And then at the end of Tuesday night, like, he looked at me because we connected really good. And he was like, the blankets, like, he was kind of looking at me, kind of shaking. And I looked at him and he looked at me and say, get the shit off. He's like, shaking. I'm like, I'm going to give you a big hug. And that motherfucker hugged me.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I guess we're hugging for 5 minutes. I just laid down him for like as long as he needed.
That's nice.
And he's like, oh, I so needed this. And then he stood up and talked to one of the guys that protects him. I'm so sorry that I did all this. And then he like broke off and cried. You know what I mean? That was pretty cool. Arjun, I loved Arjun.
I did too.
He was really cool.
Oh, he great guy.
Do you guys remember an airplane? When he's like, oh, that time you got a hold of that bad acid and thought you was up on the roof and you was Jesus Christ and you could fly. Oh, jeez. Like the elderly couple. That's what I kind of imagined. Yeah. Be like, oh, God, you thought you was Jesus Christ and you could fly.
Well, remember the guy from California that you that was into jiu-jitsu? You, he had gone previously, and he was a big dude.
Yeah,
and he started. He was on ayahuasca at a previous trip, and he started wrestling with the orderlies, like jokingly. But then it got serious.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he was tackling them and putting them in all these holds, and it was very hard for them. Like there was like six of them on top of them, and until finally tied him up.
Was that when we were there? Or
no,
was that previous.
Previous.
Oh, wow.
You can't judge people based off an ayahuasca state, that's for sure. But it was an interesting night. And again, the sharing, you know, people were starting to let their guard down and share. And did you share at all?
No, like after the things, I didn't share at all. Like whatever we did, like because when you finish, they call everybody in. I didn't share at all, especially because Tuesday was a very good night for me.
Yes.
I danced the whole time.
Oh, my God, the band. On Tuesday night, it was fantastic.
I think people are kind of like shy to go in the middle. And then I got drunk. When I hear like, no, for some reason, I just made myself in there. And I sat down in front and I closed my eyes. And then I started to just go on to it. That's when I had my liberation, my youth, my, you know, kindness or, you know, that I found my little me back again. And then that was the only actually pint I had because they were playing the songs. I closed my eyes and the thing would just like pop on my eyes. And
that's
was it.
Great. That's awesome.
And then everybody started dancing and I danced the whole night. That was like amazing.
I danced.
Yeah. Like no one's watching. I don't care. And then the guys were like, oh, okay, can I dance too? I'm like, bro, I did not leave the dance floor. If they said that was a place of healing, I was there. The girls were there. I was holding space for the girls. Some girls were kind of shy. And they started dancing again. And then, and then when it finished, that was the broken night. You know, they broke the toxic masculinity night.
Oh, God. I told you about the woman from the UK who lives in LA who, again, remember.
Yeah, the toxic masculinity.
These are supposed to be very personal sharings about what you learned about yourself. And she just went on a attack against all, specifically white males.
Yeah, because it was interesting because we were there. And then we sit down, and I'm like, still like, whoa, like it just goes on and off, right? And I'm like, feeling good. And then she's crying. For some reason, the moment she opened her mouth, I say, she's gonna say some fucked up shit. I knew right away. And then I said, well, because I come from Great Britain. And then when she started to talk about that, okay. And I'll say, okay, capitalism, war, like, where is she gonna go? And then everybody, like, as soon as she said, like, talks, I go like this.
I looked at him, and I'm like,
where? we're all like kind of like this, and we're all like, boom, and the girls are like looking at each other. That was like a moment there. Everyone was like, okay, is she gonna fix what she said?
Well, she's like, so there's people in this room that have money and power, and you have to change things. I can't change anything. I barely changed my pants.
But then at the same time, I'm like, all right, her communication skills are terrible. Maybe she means something with that, and I'm not gonna judge from it. And let's go with it. And then once everything is gone, I was like super, you know, and I came back and we're all talking. Like usually we stay like for like another hour just bullshitting. Yeah. That was pretty cool.
But a lot of the shares were really touching and impactful. I mean, I was, you know, like, oh man, that is rough.
It definitely is one thing that I pay attention about it. Like if you just go, I'm just going to do ayahuasca and you get out of there and you feel like I got nothing from it. What the beautiful thing about rhythmia is that like there's a whole science behind it. There's a social thing about it, a psychological thing. The shamans talk to you. You get to share experience with people. So there's a continuity. You know what I mean? That's what I think was beautiful. And then we had the plant, how they call it, plant integration classes.
Plant integration.
The next day, like, okay, does anybody have any questions? Does anybody have pinta? And then, like I said, JJ is very humorous and people are like, hey, who shit and pee? And shit like this. So I think that makes it the experience way better worthwhile than just like, I'm just going to sit and.
No, they did a great job with that.
Yeah.
And they make it funny. People are sharing and there's no judgment. And, except for that lady.
And then on Tuesday,
everybody treat her much different after that?
Oh, Sanjay and I both addressed in the plant integration next day.
But I think she actually ended very good because she sang the song. That was pretty beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, you missed it. Like the song that was pretty touching. Like everyone was crying balls. During
the debrief?
No, the last day, the closing day.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah. And then on Tuesday, I felt like, fuck, I got to say something. On Wednesday, right? I said, I got to say something. This group is broke. I felt the whole group was broke.
All the men were.
Because it goes from like, everybody came to me like, oh man, you're dancing. You know, it was so cool. That like, I was shy to dance. And like, okay, the group is together.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I'm hugging the girls and like, oh, thank you for holding for us. Like everybody felt that we could dance. All the guys were so amazing. So there was this whole idea of like, and that's what's the whole thing, like the traumas, right, with men, like, you know, how like girls got abused, like, you know, guys got abused. So there's this whole like break, and then she breaks even more. I'm like, okay, now we have like 40 women that has problem with guys. Now then there's a girl that talks about, which I don't put those words together, toxic masculinity.
Like, capitalism. What the fuck is this?
And, you know what I mean? Yeah. It just broke everything.
Sounds so, like talking points from the media.
It's almost like she came out of The View.
Yeah.
You show the view.
Yeah, and then when I stood up, I said I need to say something. And then it's funny because I was telling I told you about the breath work day that I needed to say something, right? Because I never told my mom about my things and stuff. And then I came back the next day, I said, guys, which I also realized that part like goes back to like people do ayahuasca all the time. I think you do those things so you can act upon your change. Mm-hmm. So I stood up and said, well, I guess staying up here is part of my fucking change and action. And I mentioned a couple of things about, you know, broken vases, the Japanese thing about, you know, fixing. And I said, like, you know, there was a broken thing and that women could trust us because we're a team and part of our healing each other. Like, and then people are like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But everybody knew I was talking about her. And then as soon as I say, okay, very good, hey, nice, oh, thank you, da-da-da-da. And then Mike goes up.
So it's almost like old school where you catch a flight home from San Diego and you step in. What I think my buddy Mitch is trying to say is I stand up and I, in a very professional and tactful way, go direct to the source of the problem and said, hey, guys, can we try tonight with the sharing to keep it focused on yourself? And I said, there was somebody last night, without calling her out, but basically calling
everybody
her out.
Knew.
But calling her out.
Yeah.
Because when I stood up, people kind of knew what I was talking about. I said, hey, because we guys are here to protect you. Yeah. We guys, like, no, I kept using the words, like, of embracing. But then we had the Mr. Direct. That was for me, in my opinion, was perfect.
Perfect. It was a balancing of
Yeah, it was energy. Perfect.
Oh, no, he was poetic.
Yeah. And then Mike's like, no, fuck all that.
I'm direct and I'm direct.
Yeah,
that's my two speeds.
Night two, I pictured myself. I was, you know, on the mattress and I pictured myself at a head of a table.
Ornate, that was beautiful. That was nice.
An ornate
Game of Thrones.
Big old Game of Thrones chair. And I was like, oh, there's me and all my grandeur and my ego and all that. And then the chair started to go away from me. Until it was so far you couldn't see me, and it had revealed an infinite amount of chairs, and that was me. That was saying to me, wow. You know, you just have a plate, one chair at this giant, incomprehensibly giant table. And then I went outside and was like, you know, wrestled with my ego, and then I stared up and saw the Big Dipper, and I thought that represents the inside of you that can't be filled, want, need, ego. And I tried to put stars into the Big Dipper, and it kept getting bigger and bigger until it turned into a chair. And I was like, whoa, dude, whoa. Like, it all came full circle. It was crazy. It was cool.
So do you think, like, a lot of your things are about the excesses in your life and try to, like, wrestle the things that really matter to you? Do you think, like, what was the biggest thing about? Because the way we explain is like, okay, I need more. Where's more? You know, interact women, more women, more drinks, money, more, more this. Okay, let's put that as a very, you know, clear like explanation about. So do you think like, and then it's interesting because when you said the thing about the table, right? It's almost like as much as you try to bring it in, more far away you from the things that matter.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So do you think that's what is up for you?
I do, and you know,
stuff will never fill the hole. And I figured this out in the NFL because I used to watch guys just buy shit.
Yeah,
right. Like, hey, I bought this new car, and then like a few days later, they'd like got a new car. I know a dude that wore different brand new clothes every single day for the entire time I knew him. Every day, finally, he'd be like, "You have tags in your clothes every day." He's like, "Oh yeah, I wake up, I put on a new like warm up, whatever it is. I go home, I throw it in the trash, and I put on a new one. I never want to wear the same clothes twice."
Yeah,
like these guys bought like I remember thinking like, if you're looking for stuff to somehow identify with. Mm-hmm. Or more importantly, fill this like bottomless hole. You just keep shoveling shit in there.
Yeah.
And
what it boils down to is you have everything you need. You have everything you need right here.
Yeah. You know? And you don't know it.
And I, you better know it. And I'm so lucky, again, gratitude, like, God damn, don't screw up this wonderful card you've been dealt or hand you've been dealt. And I'm not saying I have, you know, nobody's gotten hurt too badly. And so I have a chance to course correct. That was my goal going in. Yeah.
Beautiful.
So do you feel that you were kind of on this path and that doing ayahuasca kind of put you on a different path?
I hope so, because it's only been a month, right? And
well, but I mean, to make a change, you have to be aware that there needs to be a change.
Yes, and then you have to do the work.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm trying to do the work, and, you know, I'm going to fail. I texted Mike. I was in Nashville and got hammered and was not happy about it the next day. I was beating myself up. And thankfully leaned on Mike and he talked me off the ledge, so to speak. So and what he said was, dude, you've been doing things one way for a long, long time. Yeah. Like, you can't just expect things to change like that.
Yeah.
And on my show, mm-hmm. we got rewarded for being outrageous and imbibing and, you know, mm-hmm. being excess, mm-hmm. embodying mm-hmm. excess. That's what I got paid to do. And that's what people expected me to do off camera. I was living up to a persona that was hard to maintain mm-hmm. and sustain. So.
Well, but also, like, I think, like, even, like, I think we have a group on Facebook, and, like, you know, people get out of there. Now this is a spiritual, you know, thing that doesn't touch the ground. Say, guys, okay, we live here, but life is here. You know what I mean? Like, it's the middle term. Go have a drink. Sure. Go have a fucking amazing night of sex. Sure. Don't come and just talk about fucking flowers and things. Life is still hard and painful.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, you go have a drink. Go have a drink. You know what I mean? It is what it is. Like, don't beat yourself for it. Say, okay, maybe I'll need to work out now. Did you work out next day when you drank?
No, I needed to.
So fuck that. Go fucking work out if you ever do that.
That's
you know what I mean?
I've been working out more. So
yeah.
All I remember about the third night is one, it was extremely peaceful for me.
Yes.
And it was, I determined that was my.
How many cups did you do?
Three.
So three on the third
night. I determined that was my final night. I didn't need to do the fourth night because I came to the realization. I'm like, gratitude. I'm extremely fortunate. To your point, what I did come to the realization is I'm neglecting the things that are important in my life, my beautiful wife, my kids, because I'm trying to build this solvent financial future for them. Mm-hmm. And that's great if you do that. But if you ignore the important things, then the wheels fall off there. And it was very peaceful. Dude, I remember you. That looked like your hardest night because you were mm-hmm. out. Like, mm-hmm. well, during the debrief at the end at 1:30 or 2, you were on your mattress just, mm-hmm. you looked mm-hmm. wore out.
Yeah, I think that night was my most special night, which for me was very interesting. I don't even know what's going on. We have those tapes. I never looked at them, the one that we're supposed to record. The third night, I say, you know what, it's the ladies' night, so I have this whole connection with my mom. I say, I guess if I have to unify whatever I lost, the innocence, whatever there was, it is today, right? That's what the whole point of it. So, yeah, I came in, I had the first cup, nothing happened, and then I had the second cup, and the guy say, hey, have you tried hape? I'm like, well, I love hape, but I didn't know what's the, you know, the order. Say, go sit down. And as soon as I sat down, I wanted to cry. The guy was super nice. He has his name was Caesar. He's like, brother, are you okay? I was like, I don't see anything, whatever that is. And then and I remember sitting down in front of him, I was holding his knees, and he blew the harapi on me. And that's when I had this like little like ethereal, like split second blow up, and I was in the middle of nothingness. Maybe before creation, let's put it this way. That's right. I came back and he put all this gooey on me. I said, you need sweet in your life. I'm like, yeah, maybe I do. And by the time he was doing the harapis on me, people were blowing. It was the first time they all came to me.
Right.
And then I sat down and I was not having any. And I said, do I want to shit? Do I want to pee? What the fuck's going on? And there was one moment that like, that's when the matrix broke. That was like shit got like out of like, I had to really had a really strong mind about it. Like I said, everything was very conscious that what's happening. And I say, I'm not going to pee on the fucking thing. Because I wanted to pee, but I didn't know what I wanted to puke. And there was this whole thing about communication, about like saying things that I feel, right? So that was a thing, right? How my heart and my spirit will communicate things that I do, that I want to say, right? So then I say, fuck that. I'm going to puke in the bathroom. So I go in the bathroom and next, and then I look at the toilet, and I don't know if the toilet is full of water. I'm like, is the toilet full of water? Like, you know, you can't see that. I'm like, okay, I need to puke. And I go in and I hear a cock. Like, cock. I was like, what the fuck? I was like, and then it's almost like there's that was air, and it's went like ack, like a I don't know, it was a weird noise,
like a chicken noise.
Yeah, more like a macaw or something, right? And then we were talking about macaws. Now, you know, I'm very in tune with the macaws. And then I stopped. I'm like, it's going to happen. I literally knew that was going to happen. So I stood up in the bathroom, just went like zoom. I was like, holy fuck, I cannot be straight. Now I'm like thinking to myself, I'm going to be in this bathroom for the fucking whole time. You know, and I'm going to all these thoughts. I say, okay. And then I had this thing, okay, I want to turn the water on. And I got the water on. And because the water was running, that was real, right? And I was like, okay, that's water. And the bathroom came back. I was like, okay, I'm in the fucking Matrix now. I'm going to go outside and I'm going to, you know, make it just happen, because I want to ground myself on the floor. So I open the door and I shut the thing, and the thing goes back. Vroom. Now I look around. I can't see people's faces, right? Like, things are like very pixely. And I go to the door of the thing. I was like, okay, there's a stair here, but I can't see the stair. I was like, okay, there's a stair here. And then the stair, tutu, it happens to have a stair. So I go down and I was like, okay, and I cannot see the hammocks. I said, I don't want to go to the hammock, but I could not see the hammock. I'm like, how many steps are the hammocks? So all this hallucination came in, and I stepped on the grass, and I can't see the grass. The grass is pixeled, and I can't see people. I'm like, okay, I am that guy now. You know what I mean? Like, now I start to realize, like, okay, it's okay. Now I start to feel a little more in peace, because it's okay. I've been watching people for 2 days doing nonsense stuff. And then I sat down for a little bit. I started to feel sick, and then the sky started to get pixeled again. It was very weird, because it looked like it was two skies. I was like,
I saw that. It was like a net.
Yeah.
And then the sky.
It was very interesting.
Almost like the stars are connected.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting. And then I say, okay, this is the Matrix. I'm going to have 30 seconds to go to my fucking thing. It's going to come soon. And I just laid down and I let it settle. And then the thing came back and I just walked up, went to my bed, and I stayed the whole night in my bed. Which is interesting. Like, and then I had a lot of visuals, and I couldn't stop. And Nathan was laughing his ass off. Nathan was very good to me, because he was having the best time of his life. He kept laughing. So he's kept laughing, and Brent kept moving. He kept doing this and his thing. And this guy's like, oh, no, this is too much. Now I'm like conscious. And now I'm enjoying. Like, I'm actually enjoying, but I can't do anything. People would walk around. I'll see them here. They disappear, show up here. And I say, fuck, I want to dance. No, I don't want to dance. So all that thing happened. And then the shamans came in. I don't have it. And then Victoria came and talked to me. I said, Victoria, I don't even fucking know what you're talking about. Like, just keep talking. And I told Brent and her, I said, look what's going to happen. The Matrix is going to open, and I'm going to have 2 minutes to get to my room. So then anyway, they're talking, and then next thing, okay, I feel calm. And then Arjun started to talk, oh, we're going to go to Austin. I said, oh, I have no fucking clue what you're talking about. You know, it's funny, because Tuesday, I was super aware, super embracing, super like, yeah, I'm feeling everybody. And for a moment, I was like, why nobody's coming to me? Like, for a moment, I got pissed off. I say, okay, Tuesday, I was all about everybody. Now I fucking need some love, and nobody comes here and see how I feel. I was like, you know what? This is just how it is. Yeah, and then for a second, shit went good. I grabbed my shit, and I walk like a, you know, those girls, they grab their shoes out of the club. That's me coming out. I just went all the way through. One of the doctors was always like checking on me, because, you know, because we're doing the documentary. It's like, hey, Jerry told me to make sure I check on you. I'm like, good, but I have a minute and 30 seconds to get to my room. And then I just leave. And then that's what I did the first, I don't know, he has all the videos, so I don't know what's going on. So anyway, I went there, did the video, took a lot of nonsense, took a shower, came back and did the other video. And then I sat down, and then it happened, bro. Fuck yeah, that's all it takes. Took a fart. And that was a beautiful night. I got to feel, first I laugh. I went to bed 10 in the morning, by the way, that day.
Oh my God,
9:30. Really? Yeah, that's why I didn't go to the thing.
Yeah.
And then I had all these things about my family, about healing my family. I laugh. I call my mom. I wanted to kiss my brother. I kiss my dad. There's a lot of tragedy in my family, and I felt that my spirit feels very guilty about what happened to my family. in order for me to be where I am. So that was the biggest pain. I just felt how courageous my dad was, even losing a daughter on his hands. You know, my brother had a daughter. Next thing I know, he's living with my aunt because my mom and my dad are suffering. Now they go back together, still to have two kids. You know, so that was, like I said, even telling the story right now, it gets me because I was like laughing. Because first I was like, because I had this constipation, and it goes back to my idea of like using sex to fill a gap and things like this. And then I farted. I'm like, fuck, farting so good. You know? And then for some reason, I'm like, why people are holding farts so much? I'm like, fuck, if you're holding a fart, how come you even like not gonna hold your emotions? You know the funny things about it? My fucking Instagram is full of fucking little cartoons farting. And actually, I got a dog. I'm going to show you. You know what I mean? A fart is just a butthole blowing kisses. There is actually a shirt on it.
You said that way. Yeah, so, man, I remember.
And I'm like laughing. I start to kiss. I was like, fuck, I miss my brother, you know? Because I start to feel like, fuck, the little child had his sister. And now he's like, where's that? And I want to feel like, and I kept like just blowing kisses. Like literally like blow kisses for like another 30 minutes. And then I like, and I farted. And I say, fuck, man. A fart is just a fucking butthole blowing kisses, bro. I laughed for hours. That's like, so I thought funny. I was going to have a heart attack.
By yourself?
By myself.
In your room?
In my room. That's awesome. I was actually glad that I had, by the way, I'll never had anybody in my room.
Shep had a very different experience. So when we were setting this up, they're like, yeah, we're going to room you guys together. And I'm like, yeah, no, you're not going to room this crew together. I'm like, that's just... They made it happen where we all had singles, but Shep had a roommate.
I had a roommate.
I cannot have a roommate on this experience.
It was pretty disastrous. He was trying to hit on all the girls there. Like, he was just like the wrong guy, basically.
Yeah,
and he told me how much he's worth within 5 minutes of meeting him.
How much was he worth?
$20 million in real estate holdings.
Wow. Yeah. $20 million.
But, I mean, don't ask me how he got that because I don't think it was on the level. But... anyhow, but I mean, to speak about the third night. So on the second night, I wrote on my chest during the thing, follow, and then do an arrow to my heart. I don't know why I did that. I just did that. And I spent the evening, the rest of the evening, like, what does it mean to follow your heart? What does it mean to follow your heart? And then I asked myself that next question going into the third night. What? Show me what it means to follow your heart. Mm-hmm. Which, because it does sound like a platitude, just like someone says. It's not like like if you were, you know, designed to play football, follow your heart, right? You're big and strong. That's one thing. Or if you're good at guitar, you know, that follow your heart. But what if it's just everyday life? What if it's following your heart? So I went in there and I was told by Mother Ayahuasca what it means. And it's following the potential of your heart. It's not a destination. It's making your heart and soul full and being the best version of yourself. And that's
it's
what
about the journey, not the destination.
Right. Yeah. And it's about following your heart. And so I went inside and felt a incredible peace. And I got on my side like a baby and just laid there. And whereas earlier in the week I was struggling, I was totally at peace. Follow your heart. And then I closed my eyes and all of a sudden I had surgery, which they talk about, like you have surgery.
Yeah.
So I had a tour.
This is in your room? Or
no,
When I was reading through all the ayahuasca stuff, the amount of people that were like having like a weird surgery moment where they were like pinned up and people were pulling things out of them.
Yeah.
And like this, like that was a theme that was pretty universal.
Yeah. And so that happened and I got a tour of my heart and it was like lights were shined and it was flipped over and enlarging and all this stuff. I was like, whoa. And I was like, whoa. And then I got taken on a tour. They opened up door, they, whoever they are. A door was opened, and there was this series of cylinders and tubes with in Technicolor with memories and faces and people I care about all spinning around all of this beautiful, complicated machine, all feeding all these wires, basically, all feeding into a mainframe. And I don't know whether it's the universe or my inner self, or both. And apparently people see that too. They said, you saw the machine. And I was like, I did. I saw the machine, and that's a common thing too. Whatever the machine is.
Yeah, and what's beautiful because then you have people that you can actually talk to about it. Like, imagine if he goes to like the middle of nowhere, do a ceremony, and goes back with all this information and have nothing to share, no one that can like explain that to him. And that's another thing that was they really say a lot, which in the beginning I was like, man, I don't see anything. I kept like,
yeah.
And then like, look at this story, like. I saw nothing.
And when you saw me on my, after that, when I sat up and I fell backward, took my arms out, and I just said, take it. And I was
a nurse, brother.
You were right there. Like, yeah. And I was like, ah, and just put my arms spread out. And then a shaman came and finally did the whole thing to me, like, spit, like, they saw what I was doing, and rubbed me down and said, God bless you, brother. And I, at that point, I was like, holy shit, I had surgery, I've been blessed by the shaman, and I went outside to the fire and stood over the fire to heal my surgical wound, and it was just the most magical night, man. It was exactly what I needed.
Yeah, and then what they say, like, don't envy those things, because I'm listening to the stories, like, man, I wish I could do that.
Sounds fucking wrong with me.
Yeah. But again, I think I got exactly what I got there for going back to the wounds. It's about feeling, because I think, like, I went there, okay, show me my purpose, show me. I was a lot about showing, but I think for me, it wasn't to show, it was to feel. Yeah. You know, and that night, like I said, I laughed hysterically for an hour. We don't have phones in our rooms, so you can't call room service or like, I think some of you can tell us, hey, can we have just like a red phone in case something happened? Because I thought I was going to die. Like, I'm literally like not breathing. I'm like, but I could not stop laughing. And then I went back, and then there's the song, you know, like the Angel Message, and I kept chanting the music, calling my mom. My mom. I keep calling my mom, like, what is something that I miss so much? Just calling the fucking word mom. You know, mother ayahuasca. But I don't fucking have a mom. And a lot of my...
Did your mom pass away?
Yeah, 10 years ago. No. Which is, again, it's my birthday, my 43rd year birthday. That's 10 years of her passing. And I just kept singing, mama, and then just went on. That's like, wild. I cried for another. And then I went through the whole thing with God, and I'm like, fuck you know what I mean? Why do you make love so painful? Why you create things so you can feel pain? Why life is pain? Like, fuck you. And I'll say, but it's not your fucking fault. The cosmos exploded in a fucking maniac revolution of fire, and then there's God. You know, so you come from also fucking trouble, and then you put Jesus to fucking suffer them. So I start to go into this whole, like, why there's all so fucking suffering? Fuck you, dude. You know what I mean? Why you create those things? Now there's Islam, there's terrorism, and there's, like, all these fucking faggot, you know, fathers that rape little kids on missionaries. Like, I literally went into a fucking evil. Like, you know what? You talk about Lucifer. Lucifer's fucking awesome. Fuck you. Like, literally, I went into that now, this hate.
This theological debate.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I went to that in, and then in the same thing, and I saw myself as this little, like, but you know what, God? You also need some fucking healing. Work your shit out. You know what I mean? Like, and then I kept repeating the word, work your shit out, for like another hour. And then for some reason, I said, you know what? I'm going to help you. I'm a soldier. I'm back with you. And then I actually remember him. I kind of like, I just lay down in my bed like this, and I never felt this thing so open. I say, you know, fuck. I'm here with you.
Yeah.
You know, I have faith in you because you have faith in me. And let's do this together. If I have to be a vessel for this fucking work, let's do it. You know, you came from pain, and then you know pain. You know, you put your child in fucking world. What do you know? It's pain. You know, pain is love. Pain is suffering. We break our muscles to grow. So I guess, you know, everything has to break to a point for us to grow.
That's true.
And and that was my night. And I slept for 2 hours, woke up, and I was like laughing from here to here. I need to tell that to Mike. You know, because I felt that he was kind of upset. You know what I mean? I didn't know he was going to. I think he mentioned a little bit. And next I say, Mike, you know, I got to tell you something. And this guy like, man, I have this shirt idea. We're all like sharing. Yeah. I was like, we're all a little bunch of, that was beautiful. Yeah, Wednesday afternoon was awesome.
Sorry. There's a lot of businesses that are created out of ayahuasca as well.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Well, guys, we're running long here. I just want to finish with sort of overall overview of your opinion, of your experience. For me, I'll kick it off. Rhythmia is good. I think timing is important for some people. But overall, well run program. I'm glad we got the, you know, we all got funded by Rhythmia to go. Wanted to do a little bit of a.
I paid out of pocket.
Oh, you did? Oh, that sucks. Sucks for you.
Sorry,
buddy.
Dude. You could have taken my speed.
Well, yes, but also they do have a program, right? If you bring people, there's a whole
They have like a scholarship program.
They have a scholarship.
You got Caesar, the guy in, right?
Yeah. So Caesar was a master sergeant in the Marine Corps. We got him in last minute. Great guy.
Great guy.
You could tell he healed. But overall, you know, I can't degrade anything where people are finding healing. Yeah. Do I think I would go back? Not now. Mm-hmm. You know, would I rule it out? No. But where I'm at, I wanted to get home to my wife. And I was grateful for that. And in fact, I passed on the fourth night. Will and I are like, yeah, so you can't fly within 24 hours of taking the medicine. So that's why I did not do Thursday night, which was supposed to be the fourth night of ayahuasca. I chose to go home.
Tell us what's happening. Go home.
I just felt like I needed to go home, and we found out.
And then what happened when you got home? Isn't that a story?
Two weeks later, we found out my wife is pregnant.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, I told him, I said, when we find that son of a bitch that knocked her up, we're going to kick his ass.
What was the story that you got home?
Did you find out who did it?
You know who your friends are when Dr. Kirk Parsley and him are like, well, who's the father? And I'm like, end of text message.
Well, yeah, that's beautiful. That's how you know your real friends. Yes. Like, your real friends are the type of people that when you're not around, they build you up. But when they're around you, they just do nothing but rip you down.
That's right.
Yeah. Like, that's how I realized my brother's.
Friends
like,
supposed to put you down.
But it's also like I realized that with my brothers, like we fucking just rip on each other. But the minute they're not around, I'm like, they're the best people. Yeah, so that's like a good indicator. If I talk shit to you in person and then I build you up on the other side.
What I do realize is that the emotional intelligence or maturity of our group is still that of a 21-year-old.
Yeah.
Oh, 21?
21, 14, 18, 16?
Well, yeah. No, I deal with this. Yeah.
Well, I guess I'll again just say thank you for the Rhythmia group. You know, they're amazing. Definitely for me was, and again, thank you, John, for allowing me to do that. Like I said, the group is amazing. Rhythmia is such a special place. Definitely. Everybody's so caring. You know, the shamans, what I took from the work of the shamans in the last night that you weren't there, Mitri and the whole group, they were like doing the wash machine, they call like the car wash for like 6 hours nonstop. Like they did not stop. And he still did a wedding in the end. And the energy that they keep from beginning to end, it really gave me a big perspective of the leader that I am and like how I'm tireless to teach my guys. You know what I mean? Like it really gave me like an also that layer of like, you know what, which I actually told them, like in the end, I told me, I say, hey, you guys are fucking awesome. You know, like they're very caring. Like someone's about to puke, they're there. I think the caring, the loving, it's very special. And I think ayahuasca is a tool, but I think what they have built there as a community, you know, the beautiful nurses, you know, even you go there to get a, you know, the colon thing, you know, they're like they're laughing at you. Yeah, you know.
The colon cleanse.
Yeah,
the
and it's just like this beautiful nurse. You're like, yeah, there's a thing where I stick my ass. You know, like I said, everyone is super open. I think also the collective healing from everyone that comes there, you know, we now bond for life, you know what I mean? Yeah, and I think that's nice. And I'm looking forward to come back and hopefully, you know, join I, we can make that a go. But not something like, you know, 5 times in a year, you know, plan, like I said, we plan and make sure like we go in a good time that we can actually stay in Costa Rica a little bit. That's one thing that
surf.
In my personal experience, I had no time to chill. You know, I came back, I was in super high, already teaching, already dealing with business, flew to Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Paris. And I did 6 10-hour days of coaching in Paris. You know what I mean? Like relentless. I was there 9 a.m, you know, to go back. I left when the last person fought. So I think those things that I observed there from the people, from the experience and how much I look at those guys, man, I want to change, I want to do this. I think this is very powerful. You know, I think that's part of the work of ayahuasca.
Rhythmia was great, and it's a great sort of starter ayahuasca experience, I would say. It's basically like the Ritz-Carlton for ayahuasca. And that's my takeaway. But no, another thing is I sort of became aware of wellness, quote unquote, because it's sort of a term I didn't know anything about. I don't do yoga. I don't do breathing. But that it fosters that in you. And it opens you up to being introspective and being grateful and being vulnerable. And everybody else is vulnerable, and so you can do nothing else than let your guard down. And so I've done yoga since, and I'm going to keep doing it. I think it's really constructive, and it's just thinking about being better, and that's what it just gives you that head start, that kick in the pants, yeah. Basically. And so I'm grateful for the kick in the pants. I would go again. I would probably be interested in trying Iocane or
Ibogaine
and other stuff. So now I'm in this headspace, and then DMT and other things are interesting to me. But I'd like, thank you to Rhythmia, and I would recommend it to anybody, especially if you haven't done anything like that before. You know, I don't know.
And John, we invited you just so you felt completely left out. And like he said, we are bonded now. And we're not bonded.
I have no problem feeling left out. I'm just here to contribute. But it sounds like an amazing opportunity, and I'm sad that I didn't get a chance to go. But I'm also grateful because I know if I had gone, it wouldn't have been good in my life. Sure. But
yeah, and also brings
what I secretly wanted to happen. Was I wanted to find the Matrix, and I wanted Shanji to download jujitsu into me.
Right.
Like, do you remember when Morpheus goes, you know jujitsu? I wanted Shanji. Look, he's like,
tell something, like speaking on that, like going, just kind of like tapping on his saying, like even like with like the plant medicine, there's like mushroom retreats, and I'm really interested on that. How like a better way to like the environment to actually. You know, work those, you know, ayahuasca, Ibogaine, like, psilocybin, just like, okay, let's put stripper balls in the room. You know, like, just like, okay, let's, he's talking about building a bonfire. So, like, kind of create more an environment, okay, if I'm going to experience something to be more meaningful, you know. And speaking on it, I think because they call about, like, they say, like, your base chakras are your, like, creativity and things like this. So, one of the things doing my whole thing, they only opened up on Thursday because I had this constipation. Even after the 14th day, I was still kind of off. Just Thursday night that I felt like, man, I felt this is good. You know what I mean? I felt this thing. I did a training session when I came back, and I thought I was in fucking, That was, and even Vitor and Philippe, like, you feel different. You know what I mean? I feel my creativity towards jiu-jitsu. It's really better for some reason because I feel more creative. I feel more like this is what it is. I feel that like even teaching, I can see what matters the most at the moment. So yeah, even my training got a little better. So if you think about that.
Well, John, I hate to tell you, on Wednesday night when Sanjay was going through the Matrix, he did come to me and say, "I'm going to make you an honorary black belt." And so I haven't really brought it up. I'm waiting for him to call to do the ceremony. I appreciate that.
Well, I mean, that's part of his deal. Like, he's going to, you know, he likes to belt him. So
I would like to thank Jerry, Dr. Jeff McNary, JJ, Dwayne, and indirectly Kelly Slater, who sort of, but, you know, Jeff. Jen Sardini.
Jen was great.
Jen saw us do the podcast with Kelly Slater, and she's like, "Hey, he's on the board when you come out." So thanks to Kelly Slater. Yeah. And if you guys want to find it, it's rhythmia.com. If you're looking for maybe just a change in your life, give it a shot.
And by the way, I'm planning on doing a ayahuasca jiu-jitsu retreat. All right, talk to Jerry.
Oh, wow.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I talked to him. He said that, like I say, you know, this, I think not like make it super jiu-jitsu, just give a jiu-jitsu excuse. And also Kelly is a jiu-jitsu guy. And I think one of the reasons that I trust the idea of the rhythmia, like a real tone call or something, because I think Kelly is such a spiritual man. And I've met him before, and I don't think he would put his name in something he doesn't believe. It's like, it has a soul.
That's right.
And now I do believe it has a soul too, because even told Jerry, I say, hey, I don't really agree with those kind of hits and calls and ideals, but like, I think if there's a soul, and also I kind of run a business, some more of like helping people, hopefully that reach a cult idea. And I told Jerry, I say, hey, it would be okay, like if I do something and bring some people, because there's mats, and there's the Malacca is a matted area. He's like, yeah, we can do it. And just instead of having the times scheduled, they're supposed to have the guest speakers. That could be your class. Mm-hmm. And then you can take your group there. And then, you know, other people can do the thing. If people are here, want to do your class, they're more than welcome, right? I'm like, yeah. So I'm really trying to figure out a good time for that.
Ayahuasca and BJJ?
I got some thoughts about that.
Well, yeah, but it's not like a training. No, you know? It's just more like an excuse.
Yeah, more than anything. I get it.
Well, then, I mean, why don't I pair that and just take people to the rifle range?
Oh, God. Wow. Guns and ayahuasca. And barbecue and steaks. Yes. And then we'll just forget about the ayahuasca. And just go shoot guns and do jiu-jitsu and eat steaks.
Well, fellas, I appreciate your time. Shep, thanks for traveling all the way to Austin. All right, guys, so that's it. Hopefully this provided some laugh, some education. We'll see you next time.
Peace.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.